The roads are difficult out there, right? Our audience shrunk a little bit because of weather. Well, I thought I would speak a little this evening from Bhagavad Gita, and one verse in particular from chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. What's chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita about? Transcendental knowledge. The whole of Bhagavad Gita is transcendental knowledge. What's transcendental about transcendental knowledge of chapter 4? In the flow of the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4 is the first place where Krishna starts disclosing about himself. Because earlier he's speaking, addressing Arjuna's question about duty. And in discussing about duty, he says, before you start thinking about what's your duty, I'm paraphrasing, let's first speak about who you are before we speak about what your duty is. Well, who are you? So he identifies the self as being a non-material spiritual spark, part and parcel of the Supreme, that has qualities the opposite of matter. The soul is eternal. The soul is unchanging, immutable, fixed. Never comes into being, never has come into being, never will come into being. For that matter, won't go out of being. Soul is eternal. Can't say that about matter. It's a different set of properties. Can't be cut by any weapon, moistened by water, withered by the wind. The soul is in another category altogether. And then in understanding duty, there's another very important part, and that is doing the activities of life, working, keeping your consciousness fixed upon that spiritual conception of self. That's a challenge. Try it. It's a challenge. And that's accomplished by detachment from the fruits of work and offering work unto the Supreme. So that begs the next question, well, what's Supreme? So Krishna discloses in the fourth, beginning in the fourth chapter. And he says a number of things about himself, but one of the things that he says in verse 9 of chapter 4 is, if one can understand the subject matter of Krishna, Krishna Tattva, liberation. Purnarjanma na vidyate. No more, you break the cycle of birth and death. What to speak of detachment from the fruits of your work. You're liberated. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chakvadeham purnarjanma naiti mameti sorjana. One doesn't take birth again. Just this one item of knowledge, just to know Krishna. And the next verse, which is the verse I want to speak about, Krishna goes further. Like, what's further than liberation? What's further than liberation is attaining the stage of love in transcendental liberation, in the liberated state. Madbhavam agataha. What does that mean? That a stage that's beyond liberation, or sometimes Prabhupada calls it the fifth dimension. Sounds mystical, right? Fifth dimension. There's three dimensions. And then beyond three dimension, and there's beyond that dimension. That is to say, in the liberated state, there's a liberated state that's neutral. Beyond neutral. Neutral is indifferent to matter, indifferent to the modes of nature, indifferent to any configuration of temporary existence. That's possible by having just not neutrality towards duality, but some understanding of what is supreme. And in the stage of bhava, madbhava agataha, madbhavam agataha, it's a stage where there's ecstasy in relation to Krishna. Love for Krishna. And how is that to be reached? Two things are mentioned in the verse. It's hearing, which is a nice thing to do in spiritual life, because the whole Vedic process is based in sound vibration, and you receive sound vibration describing qualities of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the activities of Krishna, the position of Krishna, 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 Krishna. You become Krishna conscious. Naturally. So there's emphasis on hearing about Krishna, but there's another component, and that is letting go of some other stuff. Oh. You know, I have to become renounced to become Krishna conscious. Well, at least certain things that one has to become detached from. Vita raga bhaya krodha manmaya mam upashrita bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhavam agataha. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me. Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they attained transcendental love for me. That's the fifth dimension, beyond neutrality. But there's a requirement. That is letting go of certain other things. Attachment, fear, and anger. Well, we know that fear is not good and anger is not good, but, you know, kind of like our attachments. We don't want to let go of our, that's why we call them attachments. We're attached. We don't want to let go. But it's a requirement. Specifically, attachment to the material concept of life. The material concept of life. What's the difference between material and spiritual? People use that word spiritual kind of loosely and cavalierly and liberally. But a very simple definition of spiritual means that which is in relation to Krishna. Because, why? Because Krishna is the source. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matsak sarvam pravartate. So he says it twice. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. It's like saying it forwards and then backwards. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Thus knowing, one becomes my devotee. So, recognizing that all things come from Krishna, that's a problem if I'm attached, because I'm attached to something that belongs to somebody else. It's like stolen property. Belongs to somebody else, and I'm attached to it. Pull over, buddy. You're under arrest. Ah, what'd I do, sir? You're a thief. Really? Yes. You stole Krishna's property. But it's got my name on it. Look at, here's the title. It's mine. Tell it to the judge. Belongs to Krishna. And you're a thief. Now there's a way to live in the world where you recognize the property belongs to Krishna and you use it in service to the one who the property belongs to. That's okay. Then you're not under arrest. You're not a thief. Like Prabhupada gives this example, the servant of a king. The servant of the king lives in the same palace as the king. He dresses in regal clothes like the king. I mean, he doesn't sit on the big high throne, but he's the servant of the king, so he has regal clothes. He eats the same regal food. He lives in the same regal palace. He enjoys on the platform of the king. But if he starts thinking, I'm the king, it's my palace, it's my treasury, who's that guy? I have to get rid of him. God is dead. Then that's illegal. He's in big trouble. That's the law of the state. And the law of God is quite simple. We recognize everything belongs to Krishna. But there's attachment that says, well, some part of it belongs to Krishna, but I've got two pockets. The Krishna pocket and my pocket. So much for Krishna, so much for me. So much for Krishna, so much for me. It's like a mantra. Me, me, Krishna, Krishna. No good. Everything belongs to Krishna. So we have to let go of the attachment to the material conception of life. There's some good news that the process of devotional service carries us to that position if we follow it properly, even we have our attachments. Sometimes gently, sometimes a little abruptly, but it'll carry us to that stage where, and there's some degree of willingness to become free from that encumbrance of the material conception of life and take the spiritual conception of life, which is to see things in relation to Krishna. That's spiritual. And then act accordingly, that spiritual life. See in relation to God and accept. That's my position and that's the position of all things. Then there's another, that's fear. And the fear is, God's a person? I don't know if I'm comfortable with that because all of my experiences have been wherever there's person and me, there's problems. So if the spiritual realm is there's person, I'm afraid of that. I'd rather no person. So one such a person may take shelter of an impersonal conception of the Supreme, not taking shelter of the fifth dimension, the loving relationship with the Supreme. At best, they can attain this neutral state, where you're neither here nor there. Neutral. Impersonal liberation. Merging into the state of oneness with the Supreme, where I'm neither here nor there. in a neutral state, existing eternally, with no personality, no activity, no qualities, no head, no mouth, no brain, no activity, neutral. Like a twinkling star. What do you do? You twinkle. How long can you twinkle? You want activity. I want love. I want relationships. I want, because we're a person. But if I have fear of person in the spiritual realm, oh my God, I just got rid of, just trying to get rid of this problem. So there's that fear can prevent one from entering into loving relation. One has to vitaraga bhayakro, to overcoming that, or becoming freed from. And anger or frustration that is out there in the spiritual marketplace, there's so many ideas. And if you haven't noticed, every one of those ideas, the label says, this is the real deal and nothing else. This is the one. This is the best. They're all saying the same thing or something quite similar. So I can't discern between this one, that one, the other one, and so many ones. My head is spinning. So out of frustration and anger, take shelter of, again, impersonalism or voidism. So these are standard pitfalls on the path of spiritual life, where one needs to hear about Krishna. And hearing about Krishna, probably the same experience that all of us have had to one degree or another, having ventured out there in the spiritual marketplace and finding so many options and varieties, and you know, it's interesting. It's like mega interesting these days, some of the things people come up with and call it spiritual. But in comparison, like one of the teaching, there's methods of teaching, and one of the methods of teaching is compare and contrast. Because it's one of the functions of intelligence is to discriminate, discern this from that. Let's say to go from anamoya to pranamoya, for a child where the stage is anamoya. So everything is food. What's on the plate is food. My shoe is food. My brother's ear is food. Anything is food. It just goes in the mouth. Everything is food. And then there's a stage where there's a distinction, recognition between there's food, that which is meant for the mouth, and then there's life, there's something living, pranamoya. My brother's ear is not food. The shoe is not food. It's that there are things that are food and things that are not. You make distinction. And further distinction and further distinction. So, discerning between matter and spirit, as just mentioned earlier, the distinction that Krishna is making about duty, to understand first who you are. So distinguish between matter and spirit. And within the spiritual realm, there's also this distinction between the living being, the soul, and the Supreme Soul. The Supreme Soul is the one unto whom we offer the results of our work. And to hear about the personality of Godhead from the proper source will allow us to make the distinction between that which is genuinely description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of us have done this, this discerning between that and some other options that are out there in the spiritual marketplace. Like, you know, how did we decide to the degree that we've decided? How have we decided to take up the path of devotional service unto Krishna? From this discerning process that comes from hearing. I mean, each one of us, we could go around the room and say, what was your experience like? And, you know, the human interest stories would be very interesting. How we, the different, you know, options we bumped into before we said no. And then to this we said yes. I'm sure it'd be like fascinating description. But the main capacity is when you find something that's genuine, it resonates so strongly, and including the authority of Scripture is there to support it. Not just, it feels good, it feels right, makes sense, but the authority of Scripture is there to support it. It's like when my parents understood that I had taken up devotional service to Krishna. I left medical school to go join the Hare Krishna temple. And initially they thought, it's a phase. He's a young man. He's become idealistic about something. He'll get over it. But when he didn't get over it, they had a little, we better find out what this is. And when they started looking into what it is, they weren't ready to practice it themselves, but one thing they did conclude, it's genuine, it's authentic. In fact, one of my sisters had a son who joined a Christian group, and she shared with me, she was worried about this Christian group because it wasn't authentic. It was like the guy that was running, the priest, whoever it was, the head person, was running it, was not teaching what Christianity is. He was teaching something else, and she was very worried about her son. She said, but I'm not worried about you, although you're doing something so different than what I'm doing, because it's genuine. It's authentic. And how did she reach that conclusion? She's not like, you know, a blind believer. Or my brother's got to be right because he's my brother. She didn't feel that way about her son. But because there's some, she read, she heard, she, you know, examined and came to that conclusion. It's not something I'm ready to follow, but it's something that's very genuine. The ideals are very high, and my brother, he's always been one to have such high ideals. 10 years later, she came to visit. One time I was at Gita Nagari. She told me afterwards, I came to check you out. I thought it was just like, you know, a Hari Bol visit. But, you know, she just... I don't remember what was going on at the time. It was when Going Green was just getting started. Particularly it was in New England and the... Anyway... And she was just, you know, asking questions, and I was giving answers about, you know, like, what's important to me, what I'm involved in. And her conclusion was, you've always been idealistic. You've always tried to live by your ideals, and you haven't changed at all. You know, the outside looks different, but the inside you're... And I said, well, there's a little different inside, too. Because now I'm very clear what that goal is, besides, you know, high ideals. But... When there's sincerity and you hear something that's genuine, it resonates. When you want the real deal, the real McCoy, the real thing, and you hear it, and what to speak of, you experience someone who's living it. There's a living example. In the teachings, it's powerful. It's compelling. When Lord Kapiladev one of the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was instructing his mother, Devahuti, about the process of creation. He was describing how the elements would unfold one after the next after the next. It's like a domino arrangement, or maybe that's not a good comparison. It's a from subtle to the next gross, and from the next gross to the next gross. And so the gross elements contain all the things that the previous element contained plus something further. So the when the subtle element of... You want to guess what the first material element is that appears? Those of you that haven't read the Bhagavatam. The first element of material nature that appears, it's a very dear friend of ours. False ego. First element. It's the last one to go also. When false ego comes in contact with the quality of goodness, the mind, another dear friend, appears. False ego in contact with the mode of passion, the intelligence appears. And false ego in contact with ignorance, the five gross material elements appear. And then in turn, the five working senses, five knowledging acquiring senses, and the five objects of the senses. It's like a big warehouse, and these elements are there. And then Brahma assembles them according to the karma of the living entity and their former association with the modes of nature. They're awarded a form of life. So when describing intelligence, it gives what are the features, what is intelligence? And it's the power of discernment or discrimination to tell what's what, or to tell this from that. So ascertainment is a feature of intelligence. But there's another one, and that's doubt. It's a sign of intelligence. Not just like blindly, duh, yeah, but you examine very carefully. That's intelligence. As Arjuna does, Krishna says some things and he says, well, wait a minute, I have a doubt. And he presents his doubt and Krishna addresses his doubt. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains, our acharyas explain, that doubt is appropriate until one hears the genuine thing. And when one hears the genuine thing, there's ascertainment. Doubt is dismissed when the genuine thing contacts intelligence. But doubt doesn't dismiss when the genuine thing contacts ignorance or the absence of intelligence or weak intelligence or intelligence that's disturbed by an overwhelming material desire that says, I want to enjoy and that would interfere with my enjoyment, so I don't accept it. Our discerning or discriminating faculty becomes kidnapped or hijacked by material desire. And then we get to come in contact with a genuine thing. We can't accept it. But when there's sincerity, it lights on a little bit, and the genuine object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is presented in a proper manner through the cyclic succession, and just the vibration is presented. It resonates. It gets a strong yes inside. And then that moves the soul towards the Supreme. And when that soul begins moving toward the Supreme, there's a happiness, bhava, which becomes more in a more expanded state, becomes love. And Krishna is saying in this verse, in the past, many, many souls through that process of hearing have acquired knowledge of me, and being purified by that process of hearing and acquiring knowledge of me, they attained transcendental, unconditional love for me. So now we're way over on this other end of the spectrum. Like we're scratching our head trying to figure it out. Which path do I take? How many steps down the path do I take before I'm sure I'm on the right path? Or maybe we've taken many steps on the path, but we're still holding on to some attachments or some fears. If I let go of this, what about, is it real? And fear of, we might have a problem, because being in material existence means we have a relationship problem with Krishna. I'll just spin out on that a little bit and end the class. All living entities take birth in the material world because they have these two common situations. The two common situations are raga and dvesha. Raga means attraction or desire. And dvesha means adversity. It's like the example the Prabhupada gives is there's a king and his kingdom, and one of the citizens in the kingdom says, how come he's always sitting on the throne? I want to sit on the throne. At least some of the time, it's only fair, I should sit on the throne too. Equal rights, right? I should sit on the throne too. Some of the time. He can sit there some of the time. But I should sit there some of the time too. Raga. But there's a problem. There's someone sitting on the throne. So that's dvesha. I have to get rid of that. I have to depose the person who's sitting on the throne so I can sit on the throne. And those that have that disposition, raga dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. Mohena means bewildered. And bewildered by duality. The duality of raga and dvesha ends up in all this other duality. Like it's cold out, and then it gets hot out. And it's light out, and then it gets dark out, and we're happy, and then we're sad, and we're honored, and we're dishonored, and we're spinning because there's so much duality, and we have nothing to do with any of this. It just started with raga and dvesha towards Krishna. We have a relationship problem with Krishna. That's why we're here. Well, we have this thing called the material body. It's like a flag flapping in the wind that says, I'm envious of Krishna. There it is. There's proof. Got a material body. And once you're in that stuck position, envious of Krishna position, it's very hard to get out. Even you want to get out. Okay, I'll give up being envious of Krishna and twiddle your thumbs. And it doesn't happen. It's not that simple. You can't just decide to do a U-turn. It should be simple. Just do a U-turn. Go the other way. I once asked a group of children, there were some big children behind the little children, so by speaking to little children, the big children were learning. Big children meaning their parents. So I said, supposing Don't go away. I'll end the class in 3 minutes. I heard that when the curtain closes, everyone gets hungry all of a sudden. The salivation glands are... So I'll finish quickly. So kids, you see if you can supply the answer. I'm going along the path of life. I want to enjoy. And I'm trying to enjoy. There's a nice sandbox filled with toys, and I get in the sandbox filled with toys and just get sandy and get in a fight with another kid about the toys. So I give that up. Go to the playground and anyway, just go through life and I'm trying to enjoy and I'm trying to enjoy and I'm trying to enjoy and it's like not working out at all. So I reach the conclusion, I don't want to play this game anymore. I want out. I just, you know, just do a U-turn and just go back. No, why doesn't it work that way? Why you can't do that? And, you know, they were very bubbly kids, so they had different, totally irrelevant things to say. And one little girl, like, you know, 4.5 years old, raised her hand very calmly, while the others were jumping beans. She raised her hand very calmly and said, let's see if I can remember. She said, the soul says yes, but the senses say no. Then another boy raised his hand and he said, and the soul says yes, and the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. Wow. So it's not just as easy as doing a U-turn, because we have these senses that are so addicted and accustomed to enjoying, and the mind that just wants to be independent and do whatever the heck it wants and have no accountability to anybody or anything. And asserts itself very effectively, and we're like yes sir, no sir all the time to the mind. Controlled by the mind. Carried by the chariot of the mind. Manorate nasati dhavato bahi. So what's a nice fellow to do in that situation? Whether you're a little kid or a big kid, grown up. Just put on the brakes, make it zero, go out into the spiritual marketplace and, you know, everyone's saying, I got the answer. And what do you do? The advice of Bhagavad Gita is specific. Make a conscientious effort to hear about Krishna and be very careful to hear about Krishna from sources that can tell you about Krishna, not just tell you their ideas and call it, this is what Krishna is. Hear in disciplic succession very carefully, and by hearing about Krishna, being willing to let go of attachments, the fear of a loving relationship with the personality of Godhead, and the frustration that comes from so many different ideas floating around, and many of them, some of them at least, I've been cheated, and I don't want to be cheated anymore. I want to be very careful. So be very careful. But continue hearing very carefully, very attentively. Those things that make good sense to you, take those things and apply them in your life. And see what happens. That's what I did. And one of the things that's really important is chant Hare Krishna. And you chant Hare Krishna. Try it. I mean, we've all tried it, most likely. Well, most of us here have tried. And I remember as a college student, that was someone's challenge. He wasn't a devotee living in the temple. It was just another college student friend. He said, try it. What do you got to lose? Take 10-15 minutes every morning for the next couple of weeks and here's some beads. Try it. Okay, I'll try it. And after 2 weeks, what's it like? Wow, it's really powerful. It's so powerful I want to spend more time each day. So it's just the experience of connecting with Krishna, when there's, because there were other things that I was experimenting with and just didn't have the same thing, spiritual practices. It's the chanting of Krishna's holy name is, it's the Yuga Dharma. It's the most powerful thing. We have to be very careful. When you have the most powerful thing, be very careful how you use it. But when you use it, receive it properly and use it properly, it's very effective to relieve one of these shortcomings, attachment, fear, and anger, and a willingness to let go of them too is very helpful. But the process is so powerful, it provides that means. And it can carry one to the stage of love of God very quickly. So I promised you I would end class shortly, so I'll end class here and see. You all like to run and go take prasadam or ask some questions. Yes?
I'm just wondering if you could speak to how we avoid taking chanting the holy name for granted.
How do we avoid taking the holy name for granted? Well, one nice way is to associate with those who take the chanting of the holy name very seriously. And by associating with them, it'll help. But we take on the qualities of those with whom we associate. That's like a real good way. And hearing the glories of the holy name from the scriptures and persons that know what those glories are, that's another very good way. And chanting attentively is another very good way. You experience the power of the holy name and you don't take it for granted. It takes you out of material existence. Chant attentively. Strive to chant attentively, and there's a spiritual experience. Someone else? Suval?
There's three things that we have to give up in the verse.
Yeah.
Attachment, anger, and fear.
Yeah.
And probably is very specific connection to those three things.
Yes.
And I wonder if this stands to, all
sure.
Connections.
Sure. There's a verse in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita that also speaks of Vita, Raga, Bhaya, and Krodha. The application is slightly different. As you're saying, there are different aspects. Prabhupada gives specific ones here. But there's other ones as well. The other application is specific to endeavors for speculative knowledge, attachment to such process, fear of letting go of the conceptions that we've gained by speculative knowledge. Forget what the anger one is. Because it revolves around letting go of speculative knowledge and, the emotional attachment that we have to it. Yeah.
Could those also sort of be personalized in one sense? I can try to introspect and then see where is my fears lie.
Sure.
It may not be that.
Sure.
Revelation.
Sure. But ultimately, those fears connect to the spiritual. It's connected to the Supreme. Behind this little personal fear, that's like my private little personal fear, is that, the root of that fear. Our aversion to Krishna. Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah.